This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وسلم تسليما كثيرا يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته ولا تموتن إلا وأنتم مسلمون يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وخلق منها زوجها وبث منهما رجالا كثيرا ونساء واتقوا الله الذي تساءلون به والأرحام إن الله كان عليكم رقيبا يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله وقولوا قولا سديدا يصلح لكم أعمالكم ويغفر لكم ذنوبكم ومن يطع الله ورسوله فقد فاز فوزا عظيما أما بعد فإن خير الكلام كلام الله وخير الهدى هدى رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم وشر الأمور محدثاتها وكل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار. Come to chapter number 39 or chapter number 38. That is the chapter dealing with ما جاء في كلام رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم في السمر. And that is the chapter pertaining to the conversations that the Prophet used to have, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, at nighttime. As-samar is a discussion that someone has during the night. The word itself shows the precision of the Arabic language, because if you were to use this word in any of its shapes, any of its forms, as it relates to the wazn in Arabic, the person who hears this word being used, he knows that it's describing some discussion that takes place at nighttime. And the wisdom of the Bab is that talking during the nighttime is something that is disliked unless it's being done for a religious reason. Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, who has been sent as an example, لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ. You have in the Nabi, the Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, a perfect example. He's a qudwa, perfect example. So in everything that he did, if anyone who's trying to go to Jannah, if you implement his sunnah, whether the people are doing it or not, then it's going to be in your best interest, inshallah. So from his sunnah was that he used to discourage the community from staying up after Salat al-Isha unless it was necessary. And that was so that he can get sleep and then get up for the Qiyam al-Layl. Because the Qiyam al-Layl was a part of the personality of the Muslim back then. It was something that was granted that you're going to do Qiyam al-Layl. And if the companions, radiyallahu anhum, found out that a person was not making Qiyam al-Layl, if the Salaf found out a person wasn't making Qiyam al-Layl, during that time, it was a cause to criticize that individual. As it happened with the Prophet himself, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when he said about his brother-in-law, his wife is Hafsa, the son of the daughter of Umar, Abdullah ibn Umar, her brother. Prophet Muhammad said to the sister, his wife, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, ni'ma ar-rajul Abdullah ibn Umar, lo annahu lam yatruk as-salah. Abdullah ibn Umar, he's a good man, only if he didn't abandon the prayer. And the prayer that he abandoned was the Qiyam al-Layl. When Hafsa told her brother about what the Prophet said, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, Abdullah ibn Umar said, I never abandoned Qiyam al-Layl after that for as long as I lived. So that the person doesn't come and say, it's haram to speak after Isha. You can't have a lecture after Isha. You can't have a nikah after Isha. You can't have any function after Isha. It's wajib to go to bed immediately after Isha. And anything that is done after Isha, then it is either haram or makruh. These hadith show that that's not the case. If there's a reason for a person to have some kalam after salat of al-Isha, then it's permissible. If it's something that he's doing, that it can only be done at that time and it brings benefit to him, his family, to society, then it's permissible. Al-Imam al-Tirmidhi rahmatullahi ta'ala alayhi only brought in this chapter two hadith, one of which someone with a Mercedes' car is blocking the main gate of the parking lot. Al-Imam al-Tirmidhi rahmatullahi ta'ala alayhi, he brought only two hadith in this chapter, but one of the hadith is one of the longest hadith in the sunnah. And it's definitely longer than any other hadith that Al-Imam al-Tirmidhi has brought up to this point. And it's one of those complicated hadith from the angle of the words that are being used. So we'll deal with the first hadith, and that is the hadith of our mother Aisha. May Allah be pleased with her. She said, one night, the Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he started to relate an astonishing story to his wives. He started telling his wives during the nighttime about an amazing, astonishing stories. So it was reported that one of his wives commented by saying, Ya Rasulullah, this story is an astonishing story. It is as astonishing as the stories of Khurafa. The story is like the story of Khurafa. The Prophet said, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, do you actually know the original story of Khurafa, where it comes from? It said that the Prophet said, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, Khurafa was a man from the tribe of Udra, whom the jinn, they kidnapped this man. His name is Khurafa, and the jinn kidnapped him and took him away. They kept him with them for a long time. And then they returned this man, Khurafa, back to his people. So Khurafa began to relate the wonders to the people that he had known and came to know, and the strange things that he saw during his stay with the jinn. From that point on, the people began to call every story that was incredible or too much for the mind to handle, they would call it Khurafa. In the Arabic language, the word Khurafa, Khurafat, it's like those crazy things that people believe in, like superstitions, the crazy things. And they could be simple and they can be astonishing and complicated. For an example, Khurafa is a person taking a black ribbon and tying it on the pipe of his car, the door of his car, the mirror of his car, believing that the black ribbon will protect his car from the evil eye or from an accident. That's Khurafat, Khurafa. When the person makes the adhan and he says, Ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, for a person to believe in the religion that if he kisses his thumbs and he touches his eyebrow, his eyes, he'll never go blind. That's Khurafat. That's Khurafat. The khatam, the yarmi, Khurafat. Coming, sitting down, Allah, 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 huwa, huwa, Khurafat. All of that is Khurafat. But it has to do more with the crazy things that people do or people believe. Now, some people, they do things that are an innovation, but it has a basis for it, so you won't call it Khurafat. For an example, making a dua after every fard prayer, the person raises his hand and they make community dua. That's an innovation, but it's not Khurafat, because there are a hadith that encourage you to raise your hands when you make dua. They're just doing it wrong at the wrong time, in the wrong place, in the wrong mode. They take general hadith and add it to a specific situation. That's not Khurafat. Khurafat, I think, is the best way to describe it. As I say all the time, hocus pocus. That's Khurafat. Flying on a magic carpet and believing in that. Rubbing the lamp and the genie comes out like that and says, make three wishes and you'll be okay. All of that is Khurafat. This hadith that Al-Imam al-Tirmidhi brought, it is a hadith that is not authentic. has problems in the chain of narration. So the isnad is problematic. A number of people in the chain of narration, as well as the metin and the actual words of the hadith, are problematic. After hearing this story, the wife of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, one of them said, "Ya Rasulullah, these words are the words of khurafa. Your kalam is khurafat. No one is going to say that from the wife of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. If someone were to describe an authentic sunnah as being khurafat, that can be kufrun billahi, disbelief, and you can possibly go out of the realm of Islam." Someone comes and tells you, "Isa ibn Maryam, he was raised up to Allah and he's in the sama, in the heavens, and he's going to come back down at the end of time." If someone says to you, that's khurafat, do you believe in that? This can lead you outside of the realm of Islam. Anything that's hard, complicated, difficult to comprehend, to get your head around, if a person says, that's khurafat, get out of here with that khurafat. If you describe the words of the Quran or the Sunnah as being khurafat, this is a sign and can be an issue that puts the person outside of Islam. How is one of his wives, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, who knows what Allah said in the Quran, وَمَا يَنْتِقُ عَنَ الْهَوَىٰ إِنْ هُوَ إِلَّا وَحْيٌ يُوحَىٰ, he does not speak based on his desires. How can it be khurafat? He doesn't speak on his desires. He speaks as a result of revelation. His sunnah and the words of his sunnah are revelation. So if you came and you said that, then that's a problem. And you're far away from those Arabs who lived during his time, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, radiallahu anhum, the Bedouins especially, who used to come to him and they were here khutbatul haja. And he would embrace al-Islam just from here, khutbatul haja. He would read the Quran to the kuffar of Quraysh. Many of them would put their fingers in their ears and they would make noise, they would make faces, pull faces and do all kind of things. But there were some people who would go and they would listen and they would embrace al-Islam on the strength of the qira'ah of the Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So the point here is, this hadith is not authentic, but you will find this hadith spreading around amongst the sects and amongst the ranks of the people who don't put a lot of emphasis on knowledge, and their religion is khurafat. The religion of the people of tasawwuf is a religion of khurafa. It's khurafat. And that they have al-kashf. They come to know about things based upon how it smells, how it tastes, a dream he had. Building your religion on dreams, your decision on dreams, is from khurafat. No one does that. I'm going to make a decision that's really important. Get married, don't get married, name the child this, name the child that, invest, don't invest. And I'm going to do it by opening up a page and putting my finger somewhere and making a decision. That's khurafat. People of intelligence, people of Islam, are discouraged from behaving in this crazy, irresponsible way that people of kufr, they are on that stuff. Whereas al-Islam is the religion of knowledge. يَرْفَعِ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا مِنْكُمْ وَالَّذِينَ أُوتُوا الْعِلْمِ دَرَجَاتِ. Those people who have iman and they do righteous deeds and they've been given knowledge, Allah raises them up over everybody. So everybody's encouraged to have knowledge of the basics of the religion, not to let your religion be the religion of khurafat. People of tasawwuf, that's their religion. So anyone in the audience at any particular time, he could be Khidr. That's khurafat, ya akhi. Khidr is not on the scene by the Lord of the Kaaba. So stop believing Khidr is here, Prophet Muhammad is sitting here, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and all of those crazy things that people have come up with. The next hadith, Khwani, as I told you, is one of the longest hadith in the sunnah of the Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. It is known as the hadith of Zara. There are certain hadith, because of the theme, the scholars gave it one word, and everybody knows what that hadith is about. The hadith of Jibril, for an example. That hadith is well known. The hadith of the Asir, the young boy who had been hired to work for a man, and in the absence of the man, the young boy committed fornication with his wife. May Allah be pleased with all of them. The hadith of the Asir. You don't have to go through that long hadith. You know hadith al-Asir, what it's talking about. And this is the hadith of Zara. The scholars of Islam, they dealt with this hadith in explaining it. It's been collected by Imam Bukhari and Muslim. Obviously, Imam Ibn Hajar and Fath al-Bari, he did a very extensive job talking about the benefits of the hadith. Imam An-Nawwi didn't talk a lot as much as Ibn Hajar did. But nonetheless, you have to give this hadith its haq in terms of the attention that it deserves, because it's a lot. Hadith also was explained in a book by itself by different scholars. Probably the most famous of which is Al-Imam Al-Qadi Iyad, who wrote a book about this, Bughyatu Al-Muwad Lima Tadammanahu Hadith Zar Min Al-Fawaid. The point here is the scholars took care of this hadith. What I'm going to do here today, inshallah, is just read it. The hadith shows the virtues of Aisha radiallahu anha, because she's the one who's actually telling the story. It's not the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Aisha is telling about the incident in which these women came together, and each one of them decided, as women do, let us come together and talk about our husbands. We're going to tell the good and we're going to tell the bad. And if some of them have good and bad, we're going to share that issue amongst ourselves. So Aisha went on and she told the story until she got to the last lady, the mother of Zar, Zar. And then the Prophet ﷺ said some words to her that showed her virtues. So this hadith, Rasulullah never said it, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. It's a story that Aisha is saying, but the Prophet listened to it. And he aqarraha alayha. He gave her the tacit approval. So the sunnah is the thing that the Prophet said, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, himself. The thing that the Prophet did, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and the thing that was done in his presence, he saw it, he witnessed it, he heard about it, and then he smiled, or he shook his head, or he commented, giving his tacit approval that that thing is okay. So it is now referred to as being from his sunnah, although Aisha was the one who said the thing. Radiallahu anha. In Arabic, ikhwani, listen to me. You get any Arab in the city of Birmingham, any 10 Arabs in the city of Birmingham, and you tell them to read this hadith in Arabic, they're not going to understand what this story is talking about. They are not going, no, the normal average Arab who is educated in Arabic language is not going to come off the street, pick up this hadith and read it in Arabic and understand it, be able to translate it and explain it. Because the vocabulary of what's being said is on another level. And the fact that Aisha is telling this story is a proof and indication that Prophet Muhammad himself, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, was more eloquent than her. He was the reference point for the Arabic language because he used to say words. They would say, what does that mean? He would educate them and teach them what these words meant that they didn't know. And yet she still brought a story to the table that in the Arabic language, the syntax of what's being said, the nuances of what's being said, the description and illustration of what's being said is on another level. And because of all of those factors, because of all of that, there's a lot of ikhtilaf in how some of the scholars understood what some of the ladies were saying. One lady would say one thing. Some of the scholars felt and understood she was praising her husband. Like the lady who said, when my husband comes into the house, he comes into the house and he's like a fahd. He's like a panther, like a black panther. But when he goes out of the house, he's like a tiger, like a lion. Some understood that both of those descriptions are positive. Some understood, no, one description is positive and one is negative. The positive one is him going out into the world, he was brave, he was tough, he knew how to deal with the people like a lion. But when he came into the house, the panther is known for being lazy, just laying down and just relaxing and being lazy. Whereas some of the other scholars said, no, the panther, although he may be lazy, he is a beautiful animal that is sleek and a beautiful animal that is easygoing. So a husband is like the individual who comes into the house, like all of you husbands out there. When you go into your house, you're real easygoing and you're relaxed and the kids are jumping all over the place and you don't have anything to say except mashallah. That was what some of the people understood. So we're going to read this to you, ikhwani, and inshallah, azzawajal, go to the next chapter because it is quite long. Aisha, may Allah be pleased with us, she said that one day They sat together, 11 women, and they made an explicit promise amongst themselves in an agreement that they would not conceal nothing about their spouses, which is a mushkila. It's a problem for a man to talk about his wife unnecessarily to people, especially men, and for a woman to talk unnecessarily about her husband's faults when they are going to reflect bad on either partner. If the situation has gotten to a point where you have to reveal a person's weakness and his shortcomings, then the religion allows you to do that. In Riyad al-Salihin, in the chapter of Al-Ghiba, Al-Imam al-Nawawi said, "Laysat al-ghibatu fi sittatin." Ghiba is not in six things. And one of the things that there is no ghiba in is when you're making your complaint about someone who did something to you. So she has to go to the judge, she has to go to the imam, she has to go to her wali, she has to go to her wakil, her dad, her brother, her uncle. And she has to say, "My husband did this and this and that." He has to go to her father, her brother, he has to go to the court and say, "She did this, she did that, she did this." But just to sit around and to kick the woolly bobo and to eat the cud and chop it up with your friends and your women, your girlfriends, then this is a bad trait. And the Prophet told us, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, so that nobody would sit out there and think that we're on this level. None of us do that. He said, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, during his time with those awliya, he said, "Do not let any of you sit and describe to his friend what he does with his wife." The companions put their heads down. Nobody said anything. A lady stood up in the back and she said, "Ya Rasulullah, wallahi, the men do that and the women do that." The Prophet says, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, "Don't do it. For verily, the one who does this is like a shaitan who has relationships in the middle of the street." So you can't get too deep when you have problems, you have issues, and you want advice from your friend or someone. You can't get too deep about those things that reflect negatively on your partner. It's similar to taking your dirty underwear, barakallahu fikum, the top and the bottom, and just put them in the middle of the street. Who's going to do that? Billahi alayka, I ask all of you. I'm talking about washing them and then put them in the front of the door. Who's going to do that? What about while they're dirty? Even if they're clean, who's going to put his wife's undergarments, akramakum Allah, in the front of the house? Who's going to do that? Upset a man except a person who's a dayuf, daif, miskeen. That's the only person going to do it. And the woman who does that, she has no ghira, she has no adab, she has no aql. And this is a trait common with women. She has so many problems, she got so much drama, she doesn't discern who she's going to talk to. So anybody who comes, she just start telling issues to the person. So we say, if a person is forced to do that, then we have to seek refuge in Allah Ta'ala and do it with the right people in the right way. Ala kullin, she said that these women agreed amongst themselves, "We're going to talk about our husbands," which is a bad thing. Because if your husband is good, you're going to make the other lady want your husband. And if the husband is bad, you show this aura unnecessarily. You're just sitting around kicking a woolly bobo. "We're going to just talk about him, just entertainment. Instead of turning on the TV, let's just eat the flesh of our husbands." They agreed. So they began. The first lady said that, "My husband is like the meat of a lean, weak camel, which is kept on the top of a mountain, which is neither easy to climb, nor is the meat fat, so that one might put up with the trouble of fetching it." So it's clear she don't like her husband, because he's way up like the meat of a skinny camel. He ain't even got no meat. He's on top of a mountain, and the mountain is not easy to get to. Her husband is complicated. Maybe he doesn't communicate well. Maybe he treats her like a piece of furniture. But clearly, her husband is a problem in her eyes. What's the benefit of saying that? But in the Arabic language, as I mentioned, Ikhwani, if you listen to this in English, "My husband is like the meat of a lean, weak camel, which is kept on the top of a mountain, which is neither easy to climb, nor is the meat fat, so that one might put up with the trouble of fetching it." The camel ain't got no meat on it. The mountain is high. He's not worth it. He's a bum. That's what she could have said. "My husband to me is a bum, not beneficial." But she went through all of those eloquent words, saying in a nice way. The second lady said, "I shall not relate my husband's news, For verily I feel that I should be afraid, and I do fear that I may not be able to finish his story. Because if I were to describe him, I will mention all of his defects and his bad traits. Another lady who's not happy with her husband. She declined to get into the details, but she says, suffice it to say, if I start talking, I'm not going to stop. And all I'm going to say is bad and negative things about him. So that's enough for you to know where I'm coming from. So her husband was a problem. The third one said, my husband is a tall man, and he is useless due to him being thick-headed and ill-mannered. He got a big head, a hard head, thick, nothing goes in. He can't comprehend, never gets the point. She says, take the M1. He says, no, I'm going to take the M4. And he always does the opposite, and he always gets lost. It's always a problem. He never listens. And he didn't get the point yet that, hey, sometimes we should listen to the handmaidens of Allah, because it's shown time and time again, they're not always wrong. But that's this thing that we have in our mind that she don't know what she's talking about. But they do know what they're talking about at times. So that lady said, the third one, my husband is a tall man, and he is a useless man due to him having a thick head, and he's ill-mannered. If I describe him and he hears that I describe him, surely he will divorce me. And if I keep quiet, he will neither divorce me nor treat me as a wife. So the third lady, she got a problem. She had fear of her husband, though, because she knew if this news got out that she was talking about him in that ill-mannered way, there would be a price to pay, and that price would be he's going to give her the talaq. The fourth lady said, my husband, he is a moderate person like the Knight of Tihama. The Knight of Tihama in the Arabian desert is the night where the previous day it was very hot and people were burning up, and in the shade it was burning up. But when the nighttime came, there was a nice wind that you can feel, and it makes a big difference from what the people dealt with early in the day. So I don't know if any of you have ever been in those types of places, like when you go to Mecca. When you go to Mecca, Mecca's like that sometimes, so hot. Then the nighttime comes and that breeze comes. And because it was so hot during the day, the Night of Tihama is memorable. So as a result of that, they named it a night, and they also give this name to women. She said that my husband is moderate. He's a moderate person like the Night of Tihama, which is neither hot nor is it cold. She said, I'm neither afraid of him nor am I discontented with him. So one out of the four women, she has something positive to say about a man, and that was, he's an easygoing man. He's not too hot, not too cold. He's not perfect, and he's not all bad. But I can deal with that individual. The next one, the fifth woman, she said, my husband, whenever he enters into the house, he's like a leopard. A leopard, a fahad, a leopard, not a panther. A fahad is a panther as well. She said that my husband is like a leopard. And when he is outside, when he goes out, he's like a lion. He does not ask about the state of his house. So that can be because he's generally an easygoing guy. That's your domain. You handle it. As long as there's no problems, there are no needs, no issues to be dealt with, you go ahead and you relax. You and Ahlul Bayt, you relax. But some of the scholars said, no, this is a bad trait. That the man is muhmin, muqassir. He's like that guy that doesn't know. The electricity needs to be topped up. The gas needs to be topped up. You got to go shopping. The refrigerator is. Hey, somebody wake that brother up, because his mouth is open. He's going to start snoring pretty soon. Ahlen, ahlen. Welcome back. Welcome back. So there is that individual who he doesn't know what's going on in his house. His kids are getting high. His children on Xbox. His children on the internet. They're watching porno. They're doing this. His daughter's talking to someone she shouldn't be talking to. The man is so out of tune and out of touch and disconnected that the son took his car and he drove his car to London. And his son is only 12 years old. And he drove his car to London. And the father doesn't even know. So this guy, it could be a positive trait or a negative trait. Now, clearly, Ikhwani, the one in which the man comes in and he's easy and he's not an ignited fire, this one is a good thing to be like that in your home. Although everybody in the Ahlul Bayt, from the Ahlul Bayt, they should know this is a house of a system. We have an emir, we have an imam, and we have an emira, and we have Navam here. We got respect here, the way things are going to go. But nonetheless, that's what she had to say. The sixth woman, she said, if my husband eats, he eats too much, leaving the dishes empty. And if he drinks, he leaves nothing. He drinks everything. And if he sleeps alone, away from me, covered in garments. And he does not stretch his hands to avoid touching my body as he may see me grief. So there's some good and bad in that guy. He's a bit overindulgent when it comes to eating and drinking. And he's a bit insensitive and self-centered because when he eats, he's everything in sight. And he doesn't leave anything for her or other people. When he drinks, he does the same. He does the same. And that's not a good trait, obviously. She said also, after eating, he never picks up his plate. So in our culture, where we come from in Africa, the African woman, she is proud to be a housewife and to pick up the plate of her husband. If that's the culture, she's getting close to Allah by doing that. But although that may be the culture and that's her nature, that's the culture and that's her nature, she doesn't mind that you actually eat. And while she's doing whatever she's doing, if she's busy, she's washing, she's ironing, she's putting the kids to sleep, whatever she's doing, she's studying for her master's degree, the final exam, whatever she's doing. After you ate, you got up and you left the plate. She'll come in and she'll see it without saying anything, without having a second thought. She'll pick it up, put it in the sink and clean it. Second nature to her. Although all of that may be true, it doesn't mean that it's against being a man to pick up the plate and to clean it and to help. So this lady mentioned that, showing that her husband was a person who was self-centered. But she did mention something about him that was positive along with the negatives. She said about him that whenever he goes to sleep, he sleeps alone, which is a problem. She's saying in a nice way, he doesn't give her her haq, the physical haq that she deserves, that every woman deserves just like the man deserves. He sleeps alone and he wraps himself up in his garment by himself. But when I am sleeping, he never puts his hand out to touch my body as he may see me grieve. He doesn't want to wake me up. He doesn't want to bother me. He would allow me to continue to sleep. So this has some negative and this has some positive. The seventh lady, she said, my husband is an impotent wrongdoer. He's weak and he's foolish. All the defects that a person can have, they're present in him. He may injure your head, your body, or he may do both. He's a problem. He's impotent, which meant in Arabic here, he doesn't have the ability to have relationships. So he's impotent. So that's a problem. In addition to that, he doesn't have style and sophistication. If he goes to kiss her, for an example, tenderly, gingerly, he pokes in the eyeball in the process. He's too rough. He's too tough. Now, some people just got the skills and some people don't have the skills. When you first start off and you're a youngster, you tend to be a little bit rough. Like if you're one of those brothers who we mentioned in the Salat and you put your foot next to the other people, more than likely when you get married, you're going to be hard as nails. So you can practice being gentle right now by these things like that. Be easy in the Salat. Be easy when you shake people's hands. Don't be of those people you think you got to shake people's hands. No, a heart like that. I don't know what's wrong with some of the shabab of our community, but it's a consistent pattern that shows this is just part of the janoon of the shabab. Rough and tough. Rough and tough. He gets in the car and he slams the door hard. Relax. Take it easy. Everything is relaxed. So her husband was a problem from many angles. And the one who has a wife, and this is his characteristic, the wife is going to complain. If the husband is impotent, that's an eternal problem she has to deal with, and that's serious. Wallahu alam. And also, if he's rough, it's a problem. The Prophet described the women, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, as the qawarir. Rifqan bil qawarir. The man Anjasha, who was riding in the caravan, and he was going too fast, and the women were with them on the camels. But this man made the pace of the animals go too fast. Prophet Muhammad looked out and called out to him. He said, Ya Anjasha, rifqan bil qawarir. Take it easy with the bottles, with the gentle vessels. These vessels, these women, they can break easily. The Prophet said, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that Eve, Hawa, was created from the rib, and she's crooked. If you go to break her, if you go to straighten it out, you're going to break her. And breaking her is divorcing her. So her nature, her emotions, and physically, she's what's that word I'm looking for? A Sheikh Muhammad Jibali wrote the book. What did he call it? Something vessels, fragile vessels, fragile. She's fragile emotionally and fragile physically. And even when she's strong, because some women, they had to grow up strong. They had to do a lot. Even with those women, they still have those characteristics. And you don't want the one who that's dead in her. You don't want the one that is dead in her. So that is what the lady said about her husband, the seventh one. And she had the nicest thing to say. My husband, well, not so nice. My husband's impotent and he's a wrongdoer. He's weak and he's foolish. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. All of the defects that you can find in a person, you find them in him. And he may injure your head or your body, or he may do both. He doesn't do the things the right way. He's too rough and too tough. He's always in a race. He's always think that this is the last thing, right? Just take it easy and finesse that situation. The eighth woman said, my husband, he is soft to the touch, like a rabbit. And he smells like a zarnab. And a zarnab is a nice smelling grass. So she said that my husband is soft to the touch, like a rabbit. And he smells like the zarnab. Now in our culture, ikhwani, and I always talk about the impermissibility of superimposing our cultures on people and us allowing other people to superimpose upon us their culture. We have to get to know people. And once you expose, the more you expose, the more you can deal with things. When I personally first saw the Arabic toilet that is down on the floor, I thought that they broke the toilet. And I said, these people can't keep anything. They broke the toilet. And then I didn't know what to do. So I had to figure it out. Am I supposed to take my pants? I don't know. I can't do all of that. And in addition to that, excuse the imagery. I'm just sharing with you. In addition to that, there was no toilet tissue. Can you imagine? I'm coming from America, African-American. I know toilet tissue, know the other. And there was no toilet tissue. I have to stop the story there because I can't tell you how I had to do the thing. But it was a problem. Now, if I came out of that place saying, these Arabs are backwards, when in fact, that's the best way medically to go to the toilet. According to those people who have done research and study, when you go to the toilet like that, you put natural pressure on certain organs that help you to relieve yourself in a better way. And that's what the majority of the people in the world used to do. And maybe they still do, the majority of the people. Whereas when you sit on the chair, you're taking the pressure off of those organs and you're forcing yourself to strain. Is that right, doctor? Is that right? The doctor said it was right. So here I'm going to impose what I perceive as being correct. So now this individual, where we come from, Africa, wherever we come from, we're going to eat with our fingers. We're going to eat with our hands. We're going to eat with our hands. So when I see someone eating with their hands, where I come from, we don't eat with our hands. That's a sign of being uncouth, uncivilized. But the whole country is doing, the whole group of people are doing. I can't come and say these people are uncivilized. Now, I will say the fastest way for you to cause your interview for the new job to go south and to go pear-shaped is that if you're eating lunch or dinner with the people who are interviewing you, you start eating with your fingers. Now, if you want to jam up the interview, you go ahead and you do that. What I'm talking about is we can't superimpose what we think is correct on other people. White people can't do that to us. The West can't do that to us. And we shouldn't do that to other people. If this is their norm and this is how they do, then as long as the religion was quiet about it, we don't take any position. But when the religion says something about it, we take a position. So we go and we see some places, for an example, in Africa, where they put tribal marks in the skin, where they put ink all over the lips, where the women may walk in Africa and other than Africa around, and the breasts are out. So on the bus, she just starts feeding the baby on the bus. That's the culture. Okay, we're going to say no. Here, we have to draw the line. And we have to say Islamically, Islam came to change this thing right here. But the fact that a group of people are using chopsticks to eat food, we don't know how to hold those chopsticks. It's complicated. It seems complicated. So we say those people are complicated. Those people, they're this. No, that's not for you to say. And don't allow people to do that to you, to make you feel like you're a second-class citizen because of the things that you wear, eat, drink, or the way you are, the way you speak, or other than that. She went on to mention, again, that the lady said that her husband was like a rabbit. I would think in our culture, a rabbit, I don't want my wife to describe me as a rabbit. If she said I was like a rabbit, that means I'm weak in our culture. But that's not what she was saying. She was saying that her husband was a fine man. He was a guy who was taking care of his style. He was a stylish man. And plus, he had good smells. So there's nothing wrong with that because the prophet heard it. Sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he allowed it. But he didn't allow the man to go overboard with that. He said, sometimes you should go without oil in your hair. Sometimes you should go without wearing shoes. Sometimes he said, al-badada min al-iman. The word, I forgot what the word is. I'm not sure if it's al-badada. I want to take that word off the table. He said that this thing was from al-iman. And the meaning of this thing is not to groom yourself excessively. The next lady, and we're almost done here, the ninth one, she said, my husband is a tall, generous man, and he wears a long strap for carrying his sword. His ashes are abundant, and his house is near to the people can easily counsel him or consult him. So this guy right here was the man, and that he was tall, he was generous, and his strap for his sword was real long, meaning that he was like a warrior and he was a business guy. You don't mess with this guy because he got a long sword to deal with you if you mess with him. So his wife was pleased with the fact that she had a warrior man and his ashes were many. I think you all know what that means. It means that he had a lot of guests. So the more guests you have, the more you have to tend to the fire, to put the coal in, to put the wood in. So when you live with the Arabs, especially in a place called Ha'il in Arabia, but other Arabs as well, in Iraq, wherever the real Arabs are, Al-Yemen, they put that kahwa thing, and the stove that they are warming that stuff on, they have to keep adding on, and the ashes are going to come more and more and more until finally you got to throw the ashes away. So when you see a man being described as being a man who has a lot of ashes, with the Arab it meant he was a generous man. And his house was close to the people so that people could come and consult him. They can ask for his advice. So he was an intelligent man and a wise man. So she had very positive things to say about her husband. The 10th woman said, my husband is Malik. He is Malik. And what is Malik? Malik is greater than whatever I say about him. He is beyond and above all praises which can come to my mind. Most of his camels are kept at home, ready to be slaughtered for the guest, and only a few are taken to the pastures. When the camels hear the sound of the lute or the tambourine, they realize that they are going to be slaughtered for the guest. Some of the scholars who narrated this hadith or explained it, they said that this 10th woman wanted to do the 9th woman up, because the 9th woman, she was the first one to talk about how generous her husband was and talked about his chivalry and how he was a boss in terms of the size of his sword and the people needing him. So the next lady wanted to show her husband is more generous. First of all, his name is Malik. And what would tell you, how would you know what Malik is? Malik, and she went on to say, he's this, he's that, he's that. He got a lot of animals, but he doesn't take his animals out to pasture, to graze and look for water. He takes a few of them out. The other ones he keeps close because he's going to always slaughter for his guests. And there's a lot of tambourine playing and a lot of flute playing, meaning he probably has slaves men and women who are going to play instruments, dance for the guests who come. So when the animals hear that, the conditioning, like Pavlov's dog, the conditioning, when you hear something all the time, every time, it's associated with something else, you know what's about to happen. So those camels know someone's about to get slaughtered because Malik has a bunch of guests that he wants to be a host to. So Malik had a good word from his wife or from the lady that he was with. The 11th one, and she is the final one, and we're at the end of the hadith. The 11th lady said, my husband is Abu Zara. And the hadith is called the hadith of Zara. This is the hadith of this lady. The 11th lady said, my husband is Abu Zara. And what is Abu Zara? Meaning, how would you know? What can I say about Abu Zara? She said, he has given me many ornaments, bracelets, and my ears are heavily loaded with them, and my arms have become fat. Fat why? Because she eats in a good way. Not she just let herself go and fat in an ugly way, because the Arabs used to like plump women. So this lady is saying, I got bracelets all on my arms. I have earrings all over the place, jewelry, and my arms got fat too. My arms got fat because this man takes care of me and I'm eating. Unlike the other lady who her husband doesn't feed her and she's stressing. So when her people see her, they're always afraid for her. She said, my husband, he has pleased me. And I've become so happy that I feel proud of myself. He found me with my family who were mere owners of sheep. And they were living in poverty. And he brought me to a respectable, respected family. And his family had horses, camels, threshing, and purifying grain. And I come from an impoverished background. Whatever I say, he does not rebuke me, nor does he insult me. Whenever I sleep late until the morning. And when I drink water and milk, I drink to my fill. So today is having the life of Raleigh, where everything is easy for her up until this point. I sleep, wake up when I want to wake up, eat what I want to eat, drink what I want to drink. And it doesn't bother me. She went on to say, the mother of Zara. And how would you know and come to know the reality of the mother of Zara? What can I say about the mother of Zara? He said, her saddlebags were always full of provision and her house was spacious. As for the son of Abu Zara, my son, this man's son, the son of Abu Zara. She didn't call the boy her son. She said the son of Abu Zara because she was so pleased and impressed with her man. Talked about his mother, talked about his son now. What will tell you and what could I say about the son of Abu Zara? She said, his bed is narrow as an unsheathed sword, and an arm of lamb of 4 months satisfies his hunger. An arm of a lamb of 4 months. The boy can eat that and he becomes satisfied after being hungry. As for the daughter of Abu Zara, and what could I say about the daughter of Abu Zara? She is obedient to her father and she's obedient to me. She has a fat, well-built body, and that arouses the jealousy of her husband's other wife. So the daughter of Abu Zara, got a son. Her daughter's big, so she's married. She's voluptuous, fat, well-built body. As a result of that, her husband's other wife is always jealous of her daughter. As for the slave girl of Abu Zara, what can I say about the slave girl of Abu Zara? She does not disclose our secrets, but she keeps them to herself. And she does not waste our provisions. And she does not leave the rubbish scattered everywhere in our house. She went on to say, one day it so happened that Abu Zara went out at a time when the milk was being milked from the animals. So he went out. And when he went out, he saw a woman who had two sons like two leopards playing on her breast. They were sitting on her lap and her two sons were playing with her breast. And Abu Zara, he saw that situation. On seeing her, he divorced me and he married her. Thereafter, I married the nobleman who used to ride a fast, tired-ass horse and used to keep a spear in his hand. He gave me many things and also a pair of every kind of livestock. And he said, eat, Umuzar, eat as you please, and give provisions to your relatives as well. She said, yet all those things which my second husband gave me, it couldn't fill the smallest utensil that Abu Zar used to give to me. Aisha, after narrating this hadith, she said, Ya Rasulullah, Ya Rasulullah. Aisha said that Rasulullah said to her, after she finished the story, Ya Aisha, I am to you the same way Abu Zar was to Ummu Zar. And that was his way of saying that he accepts the story, there's benefit in the story, nothing wrong with narrating the story. And that's why it's considered to be a hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, although Aisha is the one who is narrating it. And as you can see, each one of those ladies, they had something to say, and a lot can be extracted from the hadith, but just reading is takes a long time. So may Allah Azza wa Jalla bless you, brothers, for your husnu istima' and for your sabr. Some things that were said in this hadith, we have to make this clear, like the hadith said, Abu Zar, he saw the two kids playing with the breast of the child, with the woman, and the other one was impotent, and things like this. And these things are mentioned because the hadith mentioned it, and it just goes to show these are the realities of life. We have to get away from that false, hypocritical taqwa that we be having, where if you mention things like a woman's period or something like that, our elders and people from the community, they get uptight. If you mention in the context of educating the people, then it is permissible. Okay, Ikhwani, if you brothers have any questions about the hadith of Ummu Zara, you can put your questions or comments, put them forward. Alindakum shay? Naam, tafaddal ya akhi. There's another narration that the Prophet ﷺ said, I am like Abu Zar, I am like Abu Zar, I am to you the way Abu Zar was to Muzar, except I won't divorce you. That part of the hadith, Bukhari and Muslim, it's not in the Bukhari and Muslim, some of the scholars, they had an issue with it because he did divorce Aisha, and he did divorce Hafsa, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. But still, it can be accepted because what he could have meant is, I won't divorce you for another woman. I won't divorce you forever. It could mean any of those things. But that is a good point. In the science of hadith, that ziyada came, and there's some nizah, some give and take. Is it authentic or not? We accept it and we embrace it. And Allah is a'la wa a'lam. Hatha wa sallallahu wa sallam wa baraka ala nabiyyina wa ala alihi wa ashabi ajma'in. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May Allah bless you guys for your good listening, man. Good job. As-salamu rahmatullah. Khalid, you're from Norway? I'm going to Denmark tomorrow, inshallah.